Chapter 13. Game and Sword. Once the meal was over, Saruth and two of the other men oversaw the construction of a crude ramp to allow easy travel up and down from Cooley's shell. The whole affair was exciting to Maqua, as he learned many types of knots from one of the other passengers, a sailor out of Barumith headed to Wazella to see family. The men of the group got together to create a wall of brush and then a makeshift latrine within it, offering the ladies on the trip a more comfortable place to take care of some of their private business. Maqua helped with all of it, and by the time the sun was high, he was good and ready for his lunch, which turned out to be dried, smoked meat Saruth had packed. One of the other travelers had packed some candy, and when Maqua offered to buy some, he was glad to sell the candies, 5 for a silver piece. Maqua traded one of the pieces he'd earned for selling fish the previous day, and passed 2 candies to both Shimna and Saruth. He popped the last one in his mouth and savored the delicious sweet flavor of the chewy spiced caramel. After lunch, Maqua, Saruth, and Shimna went fishing for dinner. The trio made a stringer and filled it over a period of about 4 hours. There were different kinds of fish, some like the ones from the day before and some new ones Maqua hadn't seen. One of them was something Shimna told him to throw back because it tasted nasty. One of the fish was 3 feet long and almost broke Maqua's line. It took all 3 of them to play the fish out until it grew weary enough to bring in. When they were done, Saruth pulled a thick Zarmuth gut rope full of fish from the water and told the two that he would need more spices to cook it all. Shimna touched Maqua on the shoulder and mentioned the nearby Zuppo flower and water cane stand. With help of one of Lady Daroth's servants, Maqua and Shimna got a basket full of the little sour fruit, as well as 2 large pieces of water cane. Maqua found that the cane had water in compartments because they took a small axe to the bottom of the tall plant, and only about 1/4 of juice leaked out before it came down with a heavy thump. While the servant dragged the heavy, water-filled cane back to Saruth, Maqua looked around and found a few nearby Kupatha vines. He took as many berries as he could find and joined the others at camp. Shimna saw him eating them and snorted at him. Her eyes rolled.
Didn't I tell you before about eating too many of those?
He remembered her explaining it to him from before, but had to admit to her that he hadn't understood what she was saying. She made a face and leaned to whisper into his ear,
"They make you go to the bushes very often if you eat too many."
He blinked and grimaced like Shimna had a moment before. A grin spread on his face a moment later, and he set off to offer the berries to Lady Daroth. Saruth looked up from his cooking and walked over after setting others to it.
"Maqua?"
He perked his ears and avoided turning his head to look.
"Yeah, Saruth?"
Saruth came alongside him and took the basket with one hand while he poked him in the ear with the other.
"You know better than to inflict discomfort on helpless victims, Maqua. You are better than that."
Maqua crossed his arms and his ears went back as he growled. He didn't want to be better than that. The annoying woman had it coming. Lady Daroth was passing by and gave the berries a curious look and then glanced at Saruth. He covered them with a hand.
A few for dessert later. I wouldn't want your appetite to be spoiled for dinner.
She smiled at that and gave a nod.
The little runt is more thoughtful than I imagined.
Maqua wished even more that he'd gotten away with it, but he caught sight of Saruth's smile as Lady Daroth walked away. His ears perked back up over several seconds of thought.
I guess you're right, Saruth. It seemed like a fun idea, though, imagining her going every 5 minutes to that latrine we built. I guess making her tail twist would just make everyone else's lives harder, wouldn't it?
Saruth's blue eyes danced.
Maqua, I think she had enough fun yesterday. While I couldn't have pushed her in myself because it would have been highly uncouth, and I dare not commend you for doing it, I do admit a certain level of satisfaction in having seen it.
His tail flicked, and he gazed after the woman, and lifted a finger without looking at Maqua.
I'm going to ask once more that you refrain from doing it again.
Sure.
Maqua grinned as they turned and went back to the basin to help with the cooking. After dinner, the group of travelers marked off a field on the beach Cooley was resting on and began to play games at the request of a passenger named Hoopa. Hoopa produced a ball from his pack and explained a game called Futh Lala. They used the puffed-up ball of futh that was knitted to be round and fluffy. The object of the game was to kick the ball into another team's circular goal area drawn on the sand outside of the triangular field. They played this with 3 teams of 3. Makwa was teamed up with Shimna, who insisted on being teamed with him. They had, as their third, the sailor named Nibba. As the game went on, Makwa's team scored 5 goals by the time the 2 other teams had scored 3 and 2. Saruth was on one of the opposing teams and grinned at Makwa's victory dance.
Dance? But remember that you're winning because you have Shimna.
Makwa snorted and looked at Shimna, who looked back and stuck her tongue out at him. He chased her in circles, which incited shrieks of laughter from her.
Come here, I'll show you. No, Makwa!
They ended up in a laughing heap as he tickled her and she squealed while making futile escape attempts. After Makwa's team was called the official victor, other games were played. The women made a game with sticks, rocks, and leaves on a board with squares. The object of this game was to take the majority of the board by filling it with sticks, rocks, or leaves. The game was called Duwu, and each player began with 4 pieces on their side of a square containing 36 smaller squares. The game could be played by up to 4 people at once. When a player made a move that wasn't near another player, they just put a new stick, rock, or leaf down in the vacant square. When they made a move that was next to the pieces of another player, those adjacent pieces became what the player making the move had. A move could be either 1 or 2 squares away from the square of origin, but no more. It did occur to him to ask what would happen if more than 3 people played it, and he was informed that in a typical board that was not made from makeshift things found in the wilderness, it would be played with pieces of 4 different colors. Makwa watched this game for a while and found it interesting, even if it was at a languid and thoughtful pace. As he watched, however, he heard a grunt and thump from behind him, followed by a small cheer. He glanced over his shoulder and saw the 2 servants of Lady Alita de Roth. One was on the ground at the feet of the other, and both clutched sticks wrapped in thick red cloth and stuffed with thuth. One of the ladies looked up from the board game.
Men.
Makwa got up from the game to go see what the noise and apparent aggression were about. He sidled up to Saruth and watched the 2 men stand, bow, and begin swinging again.
What are they doing?
They practice sword play.
Makwa winced as the servant that was the previous victor took a heavy hit to the belly, sank to the ground, and tossed down his weapon in momentary yield.
It looks pretty rough. I think he's hurt.
Saruth shook his head and pointed. The fallen man got up and took a slow, deep breath before reaching to pick up his weapon. He nodded to his opponent, and they both readied themselves to have another go. Saruth waved a hand, lifting his palm at the end.
See? He only had the breath knocked from him. He isn't injured.
Makwa watched as the padded weapons clashed and buffeted together. He saw that both men wore expressions of narrow-eyed intensity as they panted and focused on each other.
Why do they do it?
Sport, perhaps, and for the experience. Sometimes it's good to know how to fight so that when you must do so, you're ready.
Makwa's ears turned outward.
I don't understand. Why fight at all? Why not just run? If you can run fast enough, you don't need to fight, and getting hit hurts.
Saru shook his head, and a wry grin formed on his face.
Makwa, there often exist times where men can't just run. Sometimes they must fight either for what they believe in or what they protect.
He still didn't get it, and the very idea made his tail coil and twitch. He watched as one of the men took a staggering blow to the side of the head that dropped him onto the sand. The other fighter's emotionless visage changed to one of concern.
Milo, are you all right?
Milo rubbed his head and sat up.
Yes, and I'll live. Nice hit. My head will hurt for a while. I'm ready to call it your game.
Zessen nodded and helped Milo up while patting his friend on the shoulder and brushed the sand from his tunic.
Well fought.
Makwa looked from the men to Saruth.
Isn't it better to talk if you can't run? Once the watchmen caught me and I told them I was just outside late, getting medicine for my sick brother. They believed me and let me go.
Saruth took a deep breath and let out a long sigh while he held up a finger.
Yes, but sometimes that doesn't work. And in any case, lying isn't a good practice if you can avoid it. It is a relationally expensive practice. Lie to someone enough, and they will no longer believe you or respect you. Once they find that you've been mendacious with them, or others for that matter, in any sort of frequency, all trust they have for you is expended.
Men what?
How did Saruth, a foreigner, know more words in his language than he did?
Mendacious.
He waved a hand.
Untruthful.
Saruth turned to look at the swordsman, as did Makwa. He clapped for Milo and Zessen as they passed.
Well done, you're excellent warriors.
Makwa shook his head and snorted at Saruth.
I agree with the ladies playing doo-woo. Fighting is silly. I'm sure there's always a way to use your feet or mouth to solve things.
Saruth laughed and peered down at Makwa with his ice blue eyes in a way that held his gaze.
You're wrong about that. Sometimes the only way to employ your legs or mouth to bring resolution to a situation is to kick or bite. Those who say violence solves nothing make evident that they've never seen the good a little well-placed aggression can do for a person, a people, or a nation. If used when other more amiable options are exhausted or futile, your claws and teeth can save or better your life, young Makwa. Like any tool, strength can be misused, but it can also be used to help the world around you. The art of combat is a manly pursuit.
Makwa crossed his arms in silent disagreement with Saruth. The whole idea of combat and war was a bunch of silly nonsense to him. In all of his young life, he'd never been hurt by anyone who couldn't catch him. That truth was self-evident. He also didn't see Saruth as much of a fighter as he stood there in his blue robes.
When have you seen it?
Saruth walked over and sat down on a stump with a wave for Makwa to follow him. After a long moment, he walked after him and sat beside him with perked ears.
When I was about your age, I agreed with your current belief. There was another boy who lived near my home, and he had a habit of bullying me and several other children who lived nearby. During free time, he would come to us, take our toys, disrupt our games, and rough us up. One day, when I was a little older than you are, and a bit lighter, this bully came to our place of play and began picking on me. He took my favorite toy, broke it, and then pushed me down. At first, my friends laughed because they didn't want to be knocked down. I was scared, and so were they. The bully wasn't content just to be rough, though, and he insulted my family because my father was dead. He said terrible, untrue things about him, and called me things I won't mention. When he did that, I became angry, stood up, and hit him as hard as I could right in the center of his nose. He fell down, started crying, and then got up and ran home. My friends and I never had to worry about him again. When he came to bully us, they remembered what I did and told him they would do the same.
He took a deep breath and waved a hand.
So you see, Makwa, sometimes fighting helps. I had tried to reason with the bully many times, but it never worked because he did not care that he was being malevolent. I ran many more times, and sometimes I got away, but all it meant was that I'd have to do the same thing the next time. I was a timid and kind boy by nature, just as I am a reserved and kind man now. In that moment of anger, however, I learned that sometimes one must fight. Evil cannot be reasoned with.
Makwa nodded. That explanation made sense to him, in theory at least. Not that he wanted to try it.